This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Before we get underway with our next segment, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. Well, as promised before the commercial break, we're going to continue going inside the ropes. It is a very big weekend here in Houston. The PGA on their second leg of this Texas two-step as the PGA Tour continues in Houston at the Houston Open this weekend. A Texas-sized guarantee. They've got some fantastic competition. Thrilled to have with us tonight to help us break it all down. First-time guest, and he is known well here in the Lone Star State, Tim Hobby, the director of golf instruction at Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio. He is also the former head coach of the Baylor Men's Golf Program. Tim, if you did not know, had an incredible college career. He was a multi-sport athlete, played basketball and golf, played basketball here at the University of Houston. And all I have to say is, on a personal note, we know Tim Hobby very well because he serves as our son's golf and swing instructor. He is their coach, and he's amazing. I cannot believe I've not had you on the show before. Good evening, Coach Hobby. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good to hear from you.
Okay. Well, listen, we've got a lot to dive into tonight about your amazing career in golf. And we also want to talk about, obviously, the Houston Open. And you have also played in the Masters. But as you just mentioned, you are in San Antonio. We want you to weigh in on the Final Four because you were a multi-sport athlete. You played basketball here at the University of Houston and then transferred to Baylor and played golf. You also came to Houston on a golf scholarship. What are your thoughts on this year's Final Four? Who do you got winning it all?
Well, I think my son and I picked Villanova in our bracket, so I guess I'm going to have to go with Villanova. Our bracket's pretty messed up, but we've still got them hanging in there. I think Kansas is on a roll. They're looking pretty strong, and it would be kind of cool to see Loyola make it to the finals. They got to beat Michigan. Looks like they got some shooters on both teams, so I think it's going to be an exciting fight to the finish there.
Our PGA news and notes continues tonight with the director of golf instruction at Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio, and that is Tim Hobby.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our PGA News and Notes conversation with Tim Hobby, the director of golf instruction at Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio. Wow, that's going way back. Well, I'm with you, Tim. You know, I'm selecting Villanova over Kansas. I think, you know, when you look at both of those teams, they're playing their best basketball of the season, and you can't go wrong with Villanova because they've got that national player in the year in Jalen Brunson. I mean, he's a beast.
Yeah, he's a good point guard, and, you know, they've got a lot of experience, looks like, to me, which, you know, sometimes with the one and done nowadays, you know, it's tough to get that team cohesive unit, and I think they've kind of got it all clicking at the right time, looks like. So we'll see. But Kansas is pretty good too, but I think I'm going to go with Villanova.
You know, Tim, you had said that your bracket was a bit busted up. Who do you think out of these four teams, when you talk about Villanova, Kansas, Michigan, and Loyola, who had the easiest path to the Final Four?
That's a tough one. It's hard to say. They've all had tough competition. Men's basketball nowadays is so strong from top to bottom. You know, a 16-1 this year for the first time. So, you know, it's hard to say who had the easiest bracket. It seems like Villanova has kind of cruised pretty well. So maybe them, but everybody is so evenly matched these days. Anybody can beat anybody on any given night, seems like.
Well, we've certainly seen that, talking about the parity, just one more hit on college basketball. And And over the past couple of weeks, we've even talked about this on our program, is why do you think, Tim, I mean, you're a former Division I college player, played here at the University of Houston. Why do you think so many lower seeds this year pulled off an upset in 2018? It kind of seems like this is a bit of a new trend. I mean, there were a lot of teams.
Well, I think you'll continue to see that in the future just because there's so many good, you know, young men basketball players out there across the country. My son just graduated from high school. He didn't go on to play college. He could have maybe played somewhere, but it's very competitive at that AAU level.
Mm-hmm.
Just like golf, these kids are so ready to play when they come to college, unlike back in the day when I played, and they're used to playing in such pressure-packed situations in front of crowds. And so I don't think there's just more guys playing, and then you've got the international players mixed in. So it's a lot of reasons, but there's more talent to go around, I think.
You know, Tim, you played basketball, also golf at the University of Houston, and that's very unusual to be a multi-sport athlete, especially with golf and basketball. The recruiting process, how did that work for you in terms of, were you recruited for golf and then walked on for basketball? Kind of share a little bit about your story, because it's pretty cool.
Well, I'm from Alvin, Texas, just south of Houston, down toward Galveston.
Oh, yeah.
Friendswood, Pearland area. But I probably could have played either sport at most of the Southwest Conference schools. They recruited me from both. University of Houston recruited me for golf and basketball, but I grew up in the Bi Slamma Jamma era. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
That was a pretty big deal. For whatever reason, I decided the golf coach at Dave Williams at the time had won 16 national championships, and he convinced me I was going to be the next Fred Couples.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to choose golf and went there. We probably could have fielded, that was 1985, we probably could have fielded two teams in the top 10 in the country.
Wow.
That year when I showed up there. That's how stacked the golf program was at University of Houston at that time. So I got a little frustrated that I couldn't make the top five, and I went and had a meeting with Guy Lewis, the basketball coach, and asked him if I could come switch sports, and he gave me a week to get beat up and try out, and he thought I still had it, so I ended up switching over to basketball. That's kind of how it went down.
Mm-hmm. And our listeners, if they don't know, I mean, you've got to be able to qualify. You've got to be in that top five to be able to travel with the golf team. How difficult was that at Houston?
No, that's very difficult. There's many players there at U of H who've played on the tour and who've won PGA Tour events that were on the pro. They had won two national championships in a row the 2 years before I got there, with Steve Elkington and Billy Ray Brown and Mike Stanley and many others. But even when I got there my freshman year, it was very difficult to make the top five, and our second five could have won a lot of tournaments too, but mm-hmm. if you don't make the top five, you're sitting at home on the bench, and that's not a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went ahead and made the decision. You transferred to Baylor, had a terrific career, and right now we are going one-on-one with Tim Hobby. He is the director of golf instruction at Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio. Yeah, big weekend with the Final Four, but let's kind of shift gears a bit. You know, it's been a fascinating year, Tim, on the PGA, on the tour. So many big moments, dramatic finishes. You've got Tiger back, Rory McIlroy, he wins, Jon Rahm. Is there one particular moment or win that stands out the most to you? I mean, what are we learning, Coach Hobby? I mean, these younger players, they're so good, but the old ones, they're timeless.
Yeah, it's been a kind of a good year for the veteran guys. I won't call them old because I just turned 50 myself.
But, right.
You got Phil Mickelson.
Uh-huh.
You've got, I really am looking for Bubba Watson to do good things at the Masters. So he's kind of coming back. And you got Tiger Woods, you know, who moves the needle like nobody else. He's coming back. So should be a pretty exciting Masters next week. I'll be there.
Yes. And of course, you mentioned Bubba Watson. He has been on fire, two wins in 2018. What do you see different about his game? What has changed? Because his wife, she talked him back into, you know, get back in the game, get out there. You're not going to retire.
Well, I think he made an equipment error a year ago, he switched to a certain brand, a golf ball, or away from the brand that he's played his whole life. So he signed a deal to play a different golf ball that maybe he couldn't curve like the one that he's playing again now. So I think he has switched back to his old faithful golf ball that he played forever. Mm-hmm. And that's big. So a guy like Bubba, who's a shot maker and curves the ball left to right, right to left, low, high, medium, he needs to be able to play a ball that he can curve. And so I think just him getting his confidence back, and I think he might be one of the favorites going into Augusta.
Mm-hmm. He certainly is an exciting player to watch when you talk about Bubba Watson. Hey, right now we're talking with the director of golf instruction at Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio. You got to check him out. That is Tim Hobby. And did you know Tim Hobby used to be the head men's golf coach at Baylor? You were a player there, but you know, you have worked with Tim and coached some of the big name players. In fact, one of your players was Jimmy Walker at Baylor. And so I want to talk to you about, did you immediately know that he had what it would take to make the PGA Tour, and not only that, but to be a winner?
Well, my pat answer for that is I recruited him, didn't I?
Okay. Okay.
So, you know, it's hard to say. Uh-huh. I mean, Jimmy was a great player for us at Baylor. He was four-time All Big 12. Nobody's ever done that at Baylor. And, you know, he won a few tournaments. You know, maybe if I'd have coached him better, he'd have won more.
Okay. come on, Tim.
We won the Big 12 in 2001 with him and a few other guys that came in with my first recruiting class. So, I mean, he was definitely a great and made All-American his senior year. So he was a great player for us at Baylor. It's hard to say that he was going to win a major championship. I don't know if anybody could bet that, but you know, he's got what it takes to compete at that level, which is things you can't coach, like never giving up, and probably one of the best chippers, putters, short game anybody could ever want to have. And then he's a super long hitter. So, you know, he's got that it factor that you can't coach. And that's what you want as a college golf coach to have on your team.
Our PGA News and Notes continues tonight with the director of golf instruction at Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio, and that is Tim Hobby. We've got to step aside for a quick break and come on back to SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show.
Hi, this is Mike Herzing from Let's Talk Wheels, an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. I'm sure you've heard me talk about the largest recall in automotive history, and that's the Takata Airbag Inflator Recall. As of January, this recall has involved 50 million airbag inflators in 37 million cars in the U.S. alone. As the inflators age, there are more cars added to the list. This recall will eventually grow to affect 70 million inflators in 42 million cars by 2020. The recalls involve the inflator inside the airbag. This is what can come apart and kill you if you have an accident and the airbag deploys. Almost every car company has used these inflators, so check the government website, safercar.gov, every few months to see if your vehicle has been added to the list of vehicles recalled. Or at least call your dealer and ask. It's a free repair, folks, that can save your life. It's Mike Hersing, Let's Talk Wheels, brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more tips, go to the new letstalkwheels.com. That's right, the new letstalkwheels.com.
Spring is the season for Jeep brand vehicles, a time to reawaken your outdoor spirit and take advantage of the great deals on our legendary SUVs, only for a limited time at the Jeep Spring Sales Event. Really bloom this season with a luxurious Jeep Grand Cherokee. Its sophisticated design and superior capability has helped make it the most awarded SUV ever. Or greet the change in weather and terrain with the available legendary 4x4 capability of the Jeep Renegade. Rain or shine, it's got you covered. And no matter how far your spring adventure takes you, know you can always find your way home in a Jeep Compass, who's rated top of its class in technology and connectivity, giving freedom a whole new meaning. But just like spring, these great deals won't last long. So hurry into the Jeep Spring Sales Event today. Jeep Grand Cherokee has received more awards over its lifetime than any other SUV based on compact SUV segmentation. OEM website, AutoKnowledge. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our PGA News and Notes conversation with Tim Hobby, the Director of Golf Instruction at Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio. And Tim, that's got to make you feel good knowing that you've played a role in, you know, a player's success at such a high level. When we talk about Jimmy Walker, because I would assume, you know, being a coach, you know, even out on the collegiate level, many of these players, they really end up being like your own kids. I mean, you love them and you care about them. And Jimmy, I'm sure, what I would say, stays in contact with you. I have to wonder, I mean, what was that conversation like after he won the PGA Championship a few years ago that and wins his first major title? What was going through your mind?
It's pretty cool. I mean, who would have dreamt it, you know? But we live in Bernie. We live in the same town here, just suburb of San Antonio. So I just texted him this weekend to see how he was feeling because he's been struggling with that Lyme disease. So he said he's feeling stronger, he's feeling better, he's looking forward to playing well, and I hope to see him making a lot of birdies over there at Augusta this year. So he's coming back. So Lyme disease is a tough deal to overcome.
Yeah, I watched one of the interviews with him, and it was a bit emotional. He seems like he's very optimistic for 2018, but unfortunately, you know, when you talk about that Lyme disease, I guess his wife is also battling it as well. So certainly they're in our thoughts and prayers. Another quick question, Tim, you know, what does it take to play on the professional level? Because so few make it. How hard is it?
Well, it's difficult because a lot of the success to get at the, you know, to do well at the professional level is you have to play good at the right time. You know, it used to be the Q School was how you got out there. Now you got to go through the web.com, but you still have to play good at the right time. And a lot of guys maybe don't have the financial means to stay out there and keep trying. So, you know, they have to quit before they maybe could have made it. So it's not like there's a draft in pro basketball or pro baseball or pro football. A lot of times to make it on the tour or to try to make it on the tour is a very expensive endeavor. And that keeps a lot of guys that I've known over the years from making it. And just having the money to keep trying and then having that early success to have enough money to keep going, that's a big deal.
You're listening to The Voice, Director of Golf Instruction, Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio. That is Tim Hobby joining us tonight, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. We'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. You can listen to our entire interview with Tim, with Coach Hobby at podcastarena.com. So let's kind of break down the game a bit. I mean, what are some of the keys that separate, you know, good college players from being great? I mean, most of these guys that you work with, you know, they've got great ball striking skills, and I would assume length is difficult to teach, but is it all about the short game?
Yes and no. Like your son, Steven, who's going to be a really solid college player. It is about the short game a little bit. You know, that's the quickest way, but, you know, the guy, there's 40 guys that make All-American every year at the collegiate level. And what I try to tell my high school guys that are going to play college golf like Steven is that you need to develop three different shots with that 7-iron or that 9-iron. You know, when I was a college coach, what I observed, like guys like Jimmy Walker, they can hit the 7-iron two or three, four different ways, trajectory-wise, low, high, medium, that sort of thing. So you got to be a shot maker, not just a one-trick pony. You got to develop a lot of shots.
What is it about the state of Texas that produces so many phenomenal players? I mean, the weather's nice.
That's a great question.
You know, there's a lot of incredible golf courses, but what do you think that is? Because there's just been a train.
Well, that's a great question. If you just look at the Golf Hall of Fame, I think you can find many, many players in there from Texas. And what I've come up with over the years, you play in different ground conditions. There's firm ground, there's medium ground, soft ground. You got the wind, you got the rain, you got all the elements. And We have different kinds of grasses here, Bermuda grass, bent grass. And so if you can compete in Texas on our courses against our competition at every level, you're going to be successful going up the ladder.
Going one-on-one, Tim Hobby, Director of Golf Instruction, Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio. We're kind of extending this segment because we've got a lot more to get into. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, as a former collegiate coach, your time at Baylor, how did you manage guys who play an individual sport to work within a team concept? Because as a college coach, I mean, you're managing that team chemistry. I mean, one cancer can totally jack that all up. I mean, how are you getting these guys, you know, to be all for one, one for all?
That's a good question, too. What we did at Baylor is we had short-term goals, long-term goals, and when every kid arrived on campus, they got a little book, a little handbook on how to be what we were trying to do to win an NCAA championship. You know, we never did win one, but we got there just about every year, and except for one,
okay,
our first year, and then we won a Big 12 championship. So if you can get all the guys on the same page about what we're trying to accomplish on a daily basis, a weekly basis, monthly basis, that sort of thing, they know what the end goal is. They're pretty, those guys are, we had great kids, and they were all on board for doing something at Baylor that had never been done before, because when I got there, we didn't really have a stellar golf program, and now they've been in the NCAA regionals and nationals all the time, so we kind of created something that's been going on for a while, but that's how we did it, and I think if the kids know what the end goal is, they're all in most of the time.
Well, as we get ready to wrap up our interview, got a couple more minutes. Let's transition now. Tim Hobby, Director of Golf Instruction, Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio, with us tonight. It's been a big week here in Houston. The Golf Club of Houston hosting the Houston Open. But we are, you know, we're kind of in Masters mode. So talk to me about the Golf Club of Houston. I mean, how does this course, how does it prepare players for the Masters, or does it prepare them?
Well, turf grass wise, that's why a lot of the guys come there. You know, I don't know how many years ago they started playing at the Golf Club of Houston, but I know one of their goals was to mow the grass, the overseeded ryegrass. They wanted it to be similar to the turf grass that you play at Augusta the next week, and that's why a lot of the players started coming, because, you know, you got the large undulating greens there at the Golf Club of Houston, and they get them really fast like Augusta, and you know, you don't have the hills out there they have at Augusta, but a lot of the green complexes and the surrounds of the green are mowed real tight where there's not a lot of rough, kind of like they have at Augusta. So the players can kind of mimic or get a lot of the conditions they're going to have the next week at Augusta. So I think that's why the guys like coming there.
And you've played here before. I mean, you like the course?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a... It's a little long for me now,
is it?
Being an old guy, but it's a good course. Yeah, I'd like to play it from about one set of tees up from where they're playing it, but those young guys, distance isn't a problem for them.
Well, we've got the Houston Open, of course, next week. We are so excited. The Masters will be underway, and I have to mention with our listeners tonight, Coach Hobby's years as an amateur golfer were very successful. He captured the 1989 U.S. Amateur Public Links Championship and played in the 1990 Masters. I mean, just take us back. What was that like? I mean, gosh, that's like Christmas in April. How nervous were you?
Oh, I was nervous. I was really nervous. You can't prepare for that kind of thing, especially in my day. There wasn't the Golf Channel and all that kind of stuff like there is now, where you get the 24-hour golf news. So showing up there on Saturday or Sunday and then looking out from the crow's nest on Monday morning and seeing the 20,000 people lined up down the first fairway, that was a little nerve-wracking.
Absolutely. Hey, Tim Hobby's been with us. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Check him out. Director of Golf Instruction. That is at the lovely Sonterra Golf Club in San Antonio, Texas. Tim, enjoy all the festivities this weekend with the men's Final Four, and we sincerely appreciate you. We extended our coverage tonight with you. We did two segments, so we appreciate you carving out some time. Thank you so much, Coach.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hey, stick around. Much more coming your way in hour number two, the fastest 2 hours in radio at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the fastest 2 hours in radio. Big program tonight. Oh, my goodness. The Final Four coverage continues. We've got the Houston Open going on. But first and foremost, always got to take time to pause and recognize our corporate partners and sponsors because they, too, are amazing. We want you to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, they're convenient, and they're known for their everyday, guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. Well, as promised before the commercial break, our Final Four coverage will continue. And I am so delighted to welcome into the program tonight Nick Elam. He is a basketball fan. He's got an amazing background in education, in mathematics, and sports. He is the triple threat. We invited him on the program tonight to talk about some interesting ways, a fascinating study on ways to change basketball games and the way they end, and perhaps a new solution to make the finish more exciting in the last few minutes of play. I think this is going to be really an interesting conversation. Such a pleasure to welcome in Dr. Elam. Nice to have you with us. Good evening.
Thanks so much.
Well, we are always looking for ways to improve the game of basketball. And as a college professor, a sports researcher, I mean, you have gathered, we were talking earlier, you've gathered data of over 3,000 games. I mean, that's incredible. And so, you know, talk to us about this new innovative idea called the Elam ending. What is it? And also, Dr. Elam, talk to me about, you know, the inspiration behind this idea.
Sure. So it all really started the discussion back in 2004, and I was a senior at the University of Dayton, living with a group of guys who were all big sports fans, lifelong sports fans, and we were sitting around watching games just like any other that where the quality of play deteriorates during the last minute. And we're all just kind of sitting there thinking, you know, this is really weird the way that the game becomes so warped, where you've got just repeated fouling. There's really just no hope of a comeback, sloppy shots, sloppy possessions. The game just kind of fades out with a whimper. And, you know, we toss around ideas of how to fix that. And, so, and an idea that I hear very commonly even still today is that, well, maybe you could just punish the fouling team more harshly. And that sounds good at first glance. But really, that would just take their only option and make it less appealing, and you still won't give them a better alternative than fouling. So that wouldn't work. Well, we tabled that discussion, but a few years later, after we all moved on with our lives, I thought of this idea that, you know, all this stuff that we see at the end of games where the quality of play suffers, it's really just an effort to manipulate the clock. And maybe if you just got rid of the clock during the last part of the game, maybe these issues would go away. And so that was kind of the genesis of the idea, and ever since then it's been researching the necessity of the idea and how to make it sound and how to account for any possible unintended consequence. And so what I've ended up with is this concept where, again, you just play most of the game with a game clock and you play the last part without it. And I think if you do that, then you would eliminate or alleviate that deliberate fouling, the stalling that you see, the rush, sloppy possessions, and I think that combination of factors, you'd see more late comebacks, and I think you'd see more memorable game-ending moments because every game would have to end with a made basket.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand, I mean, since 2007, you have been refining this format, right?
Right. So I've thought about a lot of different variations, but I think the way to go, and this is still written in pencil, but I think the way to go would be for college basketball, to shut off the clock once you get past the four-minute mark of the second half, and then you would play to a target score, and it's equal to the leading team's score plus seven at that time. So if you get to that four-minute mark and it's 65-60, all right, we're going to get rid of the clock, and now we're going to play to 72. First team to get to 72 wins, and the idea is that the team that's trailing, there's no need for them to foul and hand away free points.
There's no need for them to rush and force up ugly shots when they're on offense. For the leading team, there's no incentive to stall. They have to keep playing assertively. And you would likely see you have more hope for a late comeback. And again, somehow the game's going to end with the swish of a net. So I think it would work on a number of different levels. So we see some great finishes in basketball now, mm-hmm. and I think there's a way to keep and enhance all the things that we like about late game play, and then get rid of the things that we don't like. And by the way, for NBA play, I think they would go at the under 3 mark, and then you play +7.
Okay. Hey, you're listening to The Voice. Dr. Nick Elam, he is a sports researcher, basketball junkie, my kind of guy, has an amazing background in education, mathematics, and sports. He's joining us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We'd love to hear from you. Weigh in on this. We are live at Twitter, at @eradiosports. And, you know, the Elam ending. So as you're saying, it would give trailing teams the option of playing real basketball, making late comebacks more likely, making the outcome of games less predictable. So talk to me about this. You know, what kind of feedback are you getting, Dr. Elam, from, I don't know, some of your colleagues out there and some of the game analysts and coaches?
Well, it's starting to gain some ground because, again, for, you know, from 2007 through 2017, I was just speaking on behalf of this, trying to promote the merit of this idea. But I will forever be grateful to John Mugar and Dan Friel and the good folks at the basketball tournament, or TBT, for implementing this format last summer in 2017 during the preliminary round play. And up to that point, I've been calling this the hybrid duration format because it's part-timed and part-untimed.
Okay.
And then they actually were the ones who renamed it and gave it the name the Elam Ending. But they put it into play, and it met all of those primary aims. It looked great. Got great feedback from really all the stakeholders involved with that tournament and the broadcasters. And looked good enough that I was able to actually deliver a presentation at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference in February of 2018 to talk about the idea there.
You know, Nick, I ask you about how has this strategy, this new strategy, been received, because it appears to clean up the game. But what kind of objections have you heard? What's the other side of the argument?
Well, really, the main one I hear is I think there's a misconception that the fouling strategy is more effective than it really is. Because we see it in about, really, just a little bit, in the college basketball, it's a little bit more than half of the games, and NBA, it's slightly less than half of games, but still, we're seeing it very prevalently, and most of the games where we don't see the fouling, it's because the trailing team just gives up, they don't even bother, and that's not such a good thing either. But in the games where we see it, really, the team that fouls only eventually wins the game only about 1% of the time. So we're going through all this, and we're seeing just an inferior brand of basketball. That's a problem enough in itself, but a bigger problem is that it doesn't change the outcome of the game. It doesn't work. The trailing team is just handing away free points. So, you know, why would we even think that it works? But so I think that's one thing, is that there's a misconception that the fouling strategy works when it really does not, and then others, and you know, are worried about doing away with buzzer beaters. But again, that was another thing that I had a misconception about, thinking that buzzer beaters happen more often than they do. And again, looking at a sample of thousands of games, finding out to my surprise that only about 1% of games ends with a meaningful made basket. And you can even slice that up a little bit more and think many of those buzzer beaters, maybe even most of those buzzer beaters, come in a tie game. So a classic example would be the 2016 National Championship, Villanova and Chris Jenkins.
Okay, yeah.
Make a shot to win the national championship that mm-hmm. came in a tie game. So you think about what's at stake there. If he makes the shot, and he did, then you win the game right then and there. If you miss the shot, then everybody gets to settle in for overtime, and who knows if the game's going to return to that same level of excitement, because most of the time, overtime games don't. But if we were to get rid of the clock and play just to a target score, you'd have many games where you get to a sudden death or a virtual sudden death scenario, next point or next basket wins. And in a situation like that, if you make the shot, you win the game right then and there. And if you miss the shot, you don't get to settle in. You have to get back and play defense, because the game could end on the very next possession. So even those buzzer beaters that we think, oh, there's no way to make this more exciting, I think we could actually enhance those. And so what you're left with then is just a fraction of a percent of games that end with a do-or-die buzzer beater, where the team that wins at the buzzer was trailing at the time they released the shot. And those are really cool. There's no doubt about it. But under the current format, even when we get those and all the circumstances align perfectly to get that perfect ending, and it should just be a totally uninterrupted celebration, we get officials who are just doing their jobs running out on the court, blowing their whistles, waving their arms, telling everybody, you got to stop celebrating because you got to go back to your bench because we got to go to the monitor and check it out. So I think the Elam ending would take away that guesswork from those game-winning shots.
The Elam ending, what will it take, or what are the necessary steps that would need to happen in order for it to become a reality, for it to become into fruition?
So, sure. So, I mean, if it were to be put to a vote to put it in the NBA or college basketball or WNBA or Olympics, right now it would get my vote. But I know it'll probably take some time to see it at other levels of play and continue to serve its primary aims like it did during the preliminary rounds of the basketball tournament in 2017. So I would love to see, you know, other semi-pro leagues, whether it's men's or women's, international leagues, whatever it might be, as kind of a testing ground for this format and for it to prove its merit, to have, you know, its chance to speak for itself rather than for me to speak on its behalf. And, you know, again, if it proves its merit, then maybe one day we'll see it at the highest levels of play.
Are you optimistic?
I am, because, again, for this whole time, there's been just things that continue to move it forward. And now, especially now that it has been implemented to some extent, and that was really the big test for me to see it, and it looked great. And after seeing it in action, yes, I'm more confident than ever that the concept will live on beyond that initial implementation.
Nick Elam, basketball fan, junkie, sports researcher, is with us tonight, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I got to ask you, I mean, give us a breakdown of, you know, you briefly highlighted some, but, you know, go in depth more in terms of some of the games that, you know, were deliberate fouling, just handed points to the leading team.
Yeah, so, you know, we think some of these games, and some of these games didn't even really come down to you know, a tense moment or anything. There's just really no hope. And you think about what late comebacks we might have missed out on. For Davidson lost to Kentucky in the first round, and they lost the game by 5 points. But if you look over the last, in that game, it was a minute and 3 seconds. They handed away 10 free points. So they lost by five, but they handed away 10 free points. What if they didn't have to hand away all those points? Virginia Tech lost by 3 to Alabama, and they had to hand away 7 free points. I mean, you can go way down the line with a list of just many, many games like that where we'll never know if they would have come back because they didn't have the option of playing real defense.
The men's Final Four is underway this weekend. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, taking place in San Antonio. We are so excited to have with us tonight sports researcher, background in education, mathematics, and sports. That is Dr. Nick Elam, who is with us tonight. You know, while we have you on the program tonight, come on, we got to talk some Final Four. You're the ultimate prognosticator. I'm sure that you had these four teams to advance, right? Your bracket's not all busted up like mine.
My bracket was pretty ugly this year. That's actually an annual tradition for me.
Okay.
For my bracket to be destroyed pretty early on. At least this year, I felt like I had a lot of company because I think everybody's bracket was wrecked pretty early on this year.
Oh, absolutely.
After seeing the way that Villanova has played so far, I feel kind of ridiculous not having picked them. They, to me, look like the best team in the tournament.
Sports researcher and basketball junkie, that is Nick Elam, with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to step aside for a quick break, and we will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Glad you're with us. Hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, we're going to rejoin sports researcher, and that is Nick Elam. It was kind of wild and just a weird year in the tournament. And as a sports researcher, we talked about this a lot last week on the program. Why did so many experienced teams, Nick, why did they go down early? I mean, what kind of trend, perhaps, are we seeing here in college basketball?
Well, for me, I'm a diehard Dayton Flyers fan, and the Flyers had a really down year this year, but they've had some success over the years before, and so I'm always an advocate for some of the mid-major teams, and I think I think sometimes the committee and just basketball at large underestimates the quality of some of these mid-major teams. And so I think that explains some of these games that we call upsets. Really, maybe we shouldn't be so surprised to see mid-major teams win some games in the tournament.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was just a very difficult year. So many scandals in college basketball. Where do you see the state of the game at this point and going forward? What needs to happen?
Well, so I don't pretend to know the solution to all the issues that face sports and society. I think if I did pretend to know, that might water down what I'm trying to say about late game play. So, you know, I think it's easy to point out some of the problems in the game. I think it's much tougher to point out some of the solutions. But where I do think, I think I do have a good idea is where the style of play gets warped late in games. I do think I have a good idea that would work there.
Well, we are all about solutions, and it's been a true honor to have with us on the program for the very first time sports researcher Dr. Nick Elam. And, of course, we've been talking about the Elam ending that would give trailing teams the option of playing real basketball and making late comebacks more likely. Do you have anything, Nick, online where you can direct our listeners where they can kind of follow and keep up with you? I mean, where can they find you?
Yeah, if you go to msportsfans.org, that is the group of Mensa members who are excited about sports and passionate about sports, kind of a small group, but we have blogs and about sports, and I post different findings that I have about late game play, that sort of thing. So it's msportsfans.org.
Very good. Nick, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Have a great weekend and Easter holiday. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You bet. That, of course, was Nick Elam joining us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. A very special thank you to all of our amazing guests. We have you covered for the Men's Final Four in San Antonio and the Houston Open here in Humble, Texas at the Golf Club of Houston. As a reminder, don't drink and drive, and we'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show.